And he's like, when's your birthday? And the kid goes,
can you crack your voice? I can't do it. Oh. Out.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Jen McQuaid.
And you have joined us for sort of 1st of May, which means, in the immortal words of Jonathan Coulton, that outdoor f***ing starts today.
I don't like that. But I'm not kink shaming you, if that's your thing.
Have you heard the song, though?
No, I'm an Ari Your Brains girl, or like the Still Alive Jonathan Coulton fan, or the Baby Got Back, like boys band version. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are really good versions. I think the only reason why I like this version is because it's the 1st of May, May being my birth month.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so I'm like, well, I mean, that identifies me as an individual. So it means I'm doing a lot of sex outdoors, apparently.
Apparently. Like, what's the name of that song?
1st of May.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
It's great.
I need a new playlist on my Spotify anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, you clicked the button. You've entered the Thunderdome. Welcome to this episode of Our Opinions That Are Solely Ours That You May or May Not Enjoy, which is kind of the premise. We're watching Hot Fuzz, y'all.
Yeah. This is the second of the Cornetto trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The Cornetto trilogy consists of Shaun of the Dead, mm-hmm. Hot Fuzz, and World's End. These are movies that are primarily, they are directed by Edgar Wright, and they're written by Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg. I don't know about the other two movies, but I know that Hot Fuzz was written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. But they all star Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, and they're always like friends who are like dealing with their relationships mm-hmm. with each other. And they're very bromancy.
They are a bit that, and I hope to delve into that into great detail with you. They are so, it's so much chopped together montage and like cut scene and like blended together scenes that it's a little difficult to describe it all. We're going to try our best to walk you through it. But when we are like, oh, wait, and this thing that happened previously, just know that there's no real great linear way to do it. But in presenting it how they do, the callback ratio and like the follow through and the way that they can go and bring back something they mentioned briefly or even showed only visually like later on in the film. And you're like, oh, that's connected or oh, that relates to that other film. Like, it's almost incomparable. The closest I got was like Monty Python-ish. But even then, like, this is really intense.
Yeah, there's so many setups, character introductions, payoffs, callouts that it's really hard to go ahead and pinpoint everything. And if you do, you are going to go insane.
Because then you're going to have to start talking about the cameos.
Right. Oh my goodness, the cameos.
But how did we get here? How did we find ourselves on the Cornetto doorstep?
Well, my background to this is, one, I love Shaun of the Dead.
Preach it.
Beautiful movie. Wonderful movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of absolutely love Hot Fuzz more than Shaun of the Dead.
That's
sorry.
Okay. We're allowed to be different people.
Yeah. This is our opinions. We are allowed to express our opinions.
I got a great love for this film.
Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to watch this movie because I liked the people who created the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's go ahead and take a look. And one of the very first notes says, best cop movie ever, taking Police Academy 2 down a peg.
Oh, right. Like, so sorry, Naked Gun.
Yeah.
We really liked you, Leslie Nielsen. I mean, we should probably do a Naked Gun at some point, but it's so, like, I don't know. But, like, I kind of want to. But yeah. I kind of want to do every film. Like, now I watch movies and I'm like, I wonder how that would fare on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. We got a nice little, like, list that we can get into.
We should. It was a spreadsheet. Oh, no.
If you would like to offer your own recommendations for movies as well, please tag us on Facebook or Twitter and we'll consider it.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
For your consideration, this piece of garbage I watched several years ago.
That's as far as we need to do for commercials, really. We're an ad-free podcast and we just need to be able to circle back in with our followers and get it done.
Okay, well, I came the same way to this movie, Hot Fuzz, because I'm the resident zombie fanatic of our friend group. I have been asked every Easter for the past decade if Jesus was a zombie, and that's a different discussion we can have later, and the answer is shortly no. But when Shaun of the Dead came out, they were like, are you going to go see that? And I was like, I've already seen it. I'm in the theater right now. What are you even talking about? And then when I found out it was a trilogy, and since I enjoyed it so much, I immediately, as a completionist, had to like watch them all. And my friend, our friend Sean, who we're about to mention, is a huge fan of the Cornetto trilogy, was probably the one who encouraged me to go see them to start with. He is now, drumroll please, our official researcher.
Yay!
Welcome, Sean. We hope that you scream a little less at this episode because you got to contribute all of your knowledge and research.
That's some great amount of research, by the way.
We appreciate it. And here's the thing, guys. You're always allowed to throw factoids at us. And I hope we use enough of them. But I'm so excited to welcome Sean to joining us. And so know that like we're going to try to call out when we're using his data specifically. Mm-hmm. But that we're just very excited to have him with us.
Yeah, he's not here today, but he's with us in all of the note-taking that we've tried to compile for this movie.
Yeah, I hope at some point we can guest star him in. It's just enough chaos trying to get all three of us together in the same room.
Yeah. All right, so should we just dive in head first?
Well, Jen, did I drag you into Hot Fuzz?
We restarted a venture together into zombie movies with 28 Days Later.
That's what really got me into it. Cillian Murphy, Rage Zombies, mwah.
And then to be able to see a comedic zombie movie that was very intriguing for us.
Comedic sounds like it was like a medical application.
Well, I would hyphenate each of the Coronado movies by saying bromantic dash. So there's like a bromantic horror, a bromantic buddy cop, and then a bromantic end of the world scenario.
All right.
And I don't think I saw World's End with you initially. I think I just saw that with Sean.
Well, here's the thing. It's the one I remember the least. But I think that speaks more to the fact that we all have different genres we're into. Horror and comedy are like my two main go-tos. So that's probably why I don't find myself in the same court necessarily with Lydia, because I'll watch an action film, but I am not going to sign up for a buddy cop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough to watch Turner and Hooch.
Love Turner and Hooch.
And it's a fine film.
That's a Tom Hanks with an animal film. Good one. Yeah. I probably do watch a lot more police movies, like Kindergarten Cop, Police Academy 2.
Not a tumor.
He's not a tumor.
I can't remember anything from the Police Academy movies to quote at you while you mention all of these movies. But like, I do remember the sound effects guy that I loved so much from the late 80s, early 90s, who is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You remember who I'm talking about, guys. The guy from Spaceballs who's like, there's a bunch of bloops, bloop, bloops.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of whoop. Anyways, okay. You know who I'm talking about. Call him out in the comments.
Yeah. So speaking of this trilogy, the reason why it's called the Cornetto trilogy is because Cornetto, a specific kind of ice cream cone sold in the UK, Americans know it as drumstick, but like the tops are a little bit more curvy.
Yeah. Ours is a scoop and theirs is like a angulated cone.
Yeah. So Shaun of the Dead being the first one is the strawberry version of Cornetto for red because you got red on you.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz is the second film with blue or vanilla. Blue, you know, because of police.
Yes, yes, yes. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And World's End is mint or green because it, spoilers for World's End, aliens are the reason.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
Gross.
That was one of those notes from Sean's notes.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Mint ice cream, mint chocolate. Okay, here's the thing. If I'm going to go mint ice cream, I'm going pink peppermint all the way.
Do it.
If you try to chocolate mint me, I will give it back to you and say thank you. I'd rather go watch Hot Fuzz and have a vanilla.
Okay. Yeah.
Shout out to Dryers. Please make your peppermint ice cream non-seasonal and year-round.
Right. You got all those leftovers candy canes. They last all year long. Make me some pink peppermint all year long. Don't make me stock up. This is America.
We don't wait for anything.
Dryers, if you'd like to be our first advertiser.
Oh, man, we get a sponsor and they're like,
what are you guys talking about? So, Hot Fuzz, we get the first shot of the movie. Is a guy walking in silhouette, light behind him, just this figure walking with determination.
A wide shot, very dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Walking like they're on a mission.
And that's his whole thing. He's always on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Doesn't know how to turn it off.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that problem, so it's hard to identify with, but I appreciate it, mm-hmm. that quality in other people.
Yeah. And then, boom, police ID.
Constable Nicholas Angel.
Yeah.
Holding up my hand like it matters to you guys.
But then we get a voiceover of this character and everything that he's done. This is Nicholas Angel. He's played by Simon Pegg.
Yeah. Born and schooled in London.
Yeah. He's got all of these recommendations, all these accomplishments. And, you know.
Between the three of us, we debated who was doing the narration. I said that it was Nicholas, right? But Jen and Lydia have differing opinions and think that it's Martin Freeman. And here's the thing. Martin Freeman, being my baby daddy, is totally allowed to take that. He can have that. He can speak to me anytime.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys, I'm going to tell you what happened. We started recording this yesterday and the audio messed up, so we had to re-record it, which is fine because our notes are down and we've watched the movie and we're all prepared, right? Mm-hmm. But like, so because we had, you know, half or more of the podcast recorded, like we've gone over a lot of this already. And Jen, feel free to cut this out if it leaves in great surprises. But the problem is, like, I remember that I said yesterday only in the moment when we go over it now. And I made some very specific comments about how Martin Freeman could order me around. And it just came flooding back. And I'm okay with not trying to say it again. But just now, when I was like, no, I don't mind him narrating my entire life. Oh, God. All right. Martin Freeman, go on. Describe to me Nicholas Angel's actions.
Right. So as this voiceover is going through, we see clips of the character walking through the police station, and it's cut because Edgar Wright does these very sharp cuts.
Yes, yes.
It's Angel walking through the station and then cut to something that he's done, like graduated from the police academy with like really high honors, yeah. And then he's walking through the station, and then smash cut again, and he took
on a number of extracurricular activities upon graduating, and then it shows him playing chess, and it shows him fencing, and it shows him hand-to-hand combating,
mm-hmm.
and all of it stuff that gets called back to later on.
Yep.
Amazing.
Right. And then towards the very end, it talks about how he has been, you know, injured in the line of duty, most recently getting stabbed in the hand by someone dressed as Santa Claus.
Oh, Father Christmas, if you're British.
If you're British, we're not. We're American. That's why we call him Santa.
Santa.
And this particular Santa isn't British either. He is from New Zealand.
Because he's cameoed by one of the very first cameos that we actually get to see of the person. It's Peter Jackson, director of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
And okay, so he's this dirty looking Santa who stabs him in the hand. And I don't know if y'all have watched Happy yet, but there's like the whole first season of Happy is all about this evil Santa who's kidnapped this girl and he's so dirty.
Peter Jackson?
No, it's not Peter Jackson. And I don't think you'd want to compare the two, but that's all I thought of when I saw it initially. So when you finally were like, Peter Jackson, mm-hmm. I was like, oh. But it looks like Dirty Santa from Happy. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
There are a number of indistinguishable cameos in this where you, unless you actually check the credits, you probably wouldn't recognize that that's the person.
Absolutely mm-hmm. not. And I think that's one of the commendable things about the film is that Simon Pegg and Edward Wright, they weren't trying to shove it in your face. They're like, this is a treat for us. This is where we call in our buddy cameo film.
Right.
But here's what I will contend. There are only 20 British actors in the entire world, and they're all in this film twice.
Yes. And so then Nicholas Angel, what you really need to take away from this first scene is that Angel is an overachiever. He tries to better himself. He is also like the best police officer in London. And he just kind of, you know, is kind of just like constantly trying to better himself and be a top-notch police officer.
He's a cop's cop.
Yeah.
And he's doing it on so many different levels. He graduated with a social and political degree. Mm-hmm. He's engaged and well-liked in the community. He's hitting all the points of what it takes to be an excellent officer. And all of that setup for this scene makes a lot of sense. But like, when I initially took it in, I was like, oh, he's just a good cop, right? And I'm, and all of my notes, like all the way through the end of this scene with Martin Freeman, I had written down like, what are the politics going on? Why is this a problem? He's a good guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have this problem. I just do too good a job. And then I wonder why other people don't like me around.
Right. But that's not actually what's kind of going on. Because when he actually sits down, you see his superior is played by Martin Freeman.
He is hotter than the middle of a Hot Pocket.
Sometimes the middle of the Hot Pocket is the most frozen part.
Depends on how you cook it.
You got to wrap that up.
No, you don't. You put it in the little sleeve and you let it sit after you've microwaved
it. That's what I meant by sleeve. Got to sleeve that up. You got to sleeve up a Martin Freeman.
I mean.
Please practice safe sex.
A public service announcement brought to you by Shocked and Applaud.
And Martin Freeman's character, which I don't think we ever learn his name, just pretty much informs Angel that he's being, one, Angel is a constable and he's being promoted to a sergeant.
Oh, and this pleases Angel. You see his face about it.
But he's getting transferred to South Gloucestershire.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Sanford, South Gloucestershire. Gloucestershire.
That's in the country.
Yeah, you said that you wanted to, you know, you wanted to go move to the country.
What, in 20 years or so?
And then like Martin Freeman actually like lifts up part of a paper and he like reads like, it would be lovely to retire with you in the country, Janine.
And he, you like, can tell that it was like audio surveillance. Like he's been spied on to find out.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I want to talk to your superior.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, you want me to call the guy? And he's just like, yeah, I want to talk to him. And he's like, okay. So he picks up the phone, presses the numbers. And then Martin Freeman's boss, played by Steve Coogan, who is like a comedic UK actor of some kind that I know very little about.
You see his face and you're like, oh, I know that face.
Yeah.
I wish I'd done more research, but that's what Sean is for.
Don't put this back on Sean.
I don't want to put it on Sean. Okay. But like
Tropic Thunder. He was in Tropic Thunder. Yeah. And there was this one movie where he was a high school director trying to put on like a Passion of the Christ kind of thing. And it was very...
He's excellent at awkward and excellent at overstepping. And he does both of those things right now.
Right. And because of the fact that we, as the audience, have information that Angel's been like stabbed in the hand, both Martin Freeman and Steve Coogan's characters say, how's the hand? Still a bit stiff. And I always kind of feel like that's a little bit of a callback to the way Angel acts. That's his personality. He's always just a little bit stiff.
Yeah, I would call it rigid, but that's just because like, and I will scream this at the top of my lungs because I remember screaming it yesterday. He's lawful good. He is incapable of stepping outside of what is lawful, and if he sees what is right and needs doing, he's gonna do it. He won't wait for anybody else to do it. It's his main impetus. It's like the thing that drives him more than anything else, and they substantiate that over and over again. But you could see how some of the rest of us maybe don't get along with that so well. So they're like, you're a great cop, a wonderful cop, we don't want you here anymore.
Right. They give that specific information when their boss, the chief inspector.
Because Martin is like, I don't want this. And the expected progression of escalation of this situation is to call in the superior. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I want to talk to the chief constable.
Right.
Or the chief of police or whatever the actual British title is. And they're like, so this guy is like, you want me to call the up and up? And he's like, yes, I do. And he's like, he goes for the phone. He's like, you really want to call the guy? And he's like, yes, I do. And then Angel.
Well, then Steve Coogan's character he acts like he's reaching the phone and then he just completely drops in and says, Kenneth!
Because of freaking course he's going to go for the next up.
Right.
He's going to escalate appropriately.
Yeah.
And so then, guys,
Bill Nighy shows up.
I just screamed Slarty Bart fast at the screen because I'm a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan. So he comes in there with his like, oh, he's just austere, but also can deliver such great comedic timing. Mm-hmm. And he sits down and he assumes authority. And I love that.
Right. And he says, if we continue to let you run around being exceptional, you'll put us all out of a job. And then Angel retorts with respect, sir, you can't just make people disappear. And he's like, yes, I can. I'm the chief inspector. And it's like beautiful Bill Nighy sort of tone. It's wonderful.
Yes, yes. It's just dismissive. You're going to be doing this. We've assigned you. Mm-hmm. You'll get a cottage. It'll be great. It's a perfect little town. They won Village of the Year for like ever.
It's practically safe. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, and but this is the high stakes, high takedown type of cop. So he's like, that sounds like torture.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't we just cut to another montage, which I've called the sad travel montage.
Well, before they do cut to that, he's like, let's gonna see what the team says. And Angel picks up and he walks out and he just opens the door. And what do you see?
Good luck.
And it's all
bon voyage.
It's all of his like peers just like wishing him good luck. And there's a banner and...
And you know that every single one of them, he's corrected on procedure on multiple occasions.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not with vehemence in his heart, because he doesn't seem like that kind of character. But he'd be like, you know, you need to fill out an form H7612 with that. And if you fill out an H467 form with that, you have to get a C22A.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that you're using a purple pen, but the standard is blue or black. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's that guy.
Yeah.
And I get it, but you know he's rubbed everyone the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're kind of okay with him leaving, because like he makes it kind of impossible for them to feel like they're doing their job well.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm somebody who like strives really hard to accept correction, but I've been overcorrected before and I've been like, you're going too far. This is like roughing up our relationship. But I will also note, and I remember pointing this out earlier, this is the only scene with any kind of diversity in it. There are in this, and he comes out to a crowd of probably 40 plus people, maybe 50 or more people, all crammed into a room, like popping corks and whatever for him. There's two brown people in it. They are separated apart. You can tell it's kind of done on purpose, so they look more diverse than they are, but there's just two guys. And then the rest of the film.
Maybe this is why it's the flavor of this film is vanilla. I'm sorry.
That's what I showed up for. Okay.
Yeah. And so Angel is, you know, being...
I just tried to skip two scenes. I forgot the goodbye scene. And so, then what's he going
to
go do?
Yeah. He's going to have to go and speak to the most important person that is going to definitely be affected by this tragic news that he's going to be picking up and leaving. His ex-girlfriend, Janine.
Yeah. Yeah. Janine. Oh, Janine.
Fun fact, in this scene, Janine is played by Cate Blanchett. It's another cameo, ladies and gentlemen.
Pew, 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 pew.
And everybody in between, because non-binary people are great.
What?
Well, I kept saying ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
And not people, like ladies, gentlemen, and those that lie between.
Yeah. Doctor Who says it, ladies and gentlemen, and variations thereupon.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
okay.
You'd never know it's Cate Blanchett, though.
Because she has a surgical mask the entire time. Her hair is covered. At some point, she takes off her goggles. But like, and maybe if you've gazed into Cate Blanchett's eyes, you would have a better idea than me. But I just think she sounds like a nice British lady.
Yeah. But everybody looks the same. They all have like these outfits on that cover up everything except their eyes. Mm-hmm. And they all look the same.
Okay. What happens is he shows up on the case she's working because, of course, he's dating another cop. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's operating as the SOCO, which is a scene of crime officer. She's in charge of this particular situation. And she gets a phone call and she just rolls her eyes and she's like, "Ugh, yes, Nicholas."
And he's like, "What's the situation?" "You know the situation." "No, I mean here in the crime." And she tells him she's being wonderfully witty and talking about like something that could be talking about the crime, but also about their relationship.
Yeah, it could go both ways. She's like, "It's domestic, involving two people who are having a hard time communicating."
Yeah.
He's like, something like that.
"You do mean the crime scene, right?"
She's like, "What are you here for?" "I'm here to talk to you about something that I didn't want to tell you over the phone." And what he's doing is, she's on her phone, he's looking at her through the window on his phone.
Yeah.
So then he's like, oh, this defeats the purpose. He closes his flip phone because it's 2007, y'all.
Yeah.
And he walks into the crime scene, which apparently people not assigned to a case are allowed to do.
Well, he probably flashed his badge. Maybe was just sort of like, "Hey, guy.
Hi."
If there's a way in, Nicholas Angel would know the way in.
Yeah, but you'd have to do it on procedure, and I just don't think that's procedure.
He has a piece of paper that he carries on him all the time with a pen.
I'm sure he does. But like, he's not in PP&Es. He's not dressed for the crime scene. I don't get it. How is he allowed in there? But Oh, whatever. Well, for the sake of cinematography, now they get into it. Right. No, he walks in and he talks to...
He's like, Janine, I'm being transferred to Sanford. I'm being transferred to South Gloucester.
Not Janine. And the dude turns around and walks away.
And then he turns to the next person that he sees and he says, Janine, I'm being transferred. And she's like, yes, I know.
Dave told me.
And I was like, hello.
Yeah, he just walks past him.
And that's when they, you know, are talking about the relationship, the fact that, you know, he was like, well, I wanted to at least tell you because we were talking about getting married. And she's like, yeah, but you're already married to the job.
They beat us over the head with that pretty hard.
Yeah. And then he, you know, eventually he's like, yeah, well, you know, guilty. Like, he was the one who called off their relationship first. He said, you know, guilty parties generally make the first move. And then she was like, well, there's something that I need to tell you. And he's like, you're seeing someone else, aren't you? And she's like, yes. How did you know?
Is it Dave? And she's like, Dave, does Dave look like the kind of guy I would go out with? And Dave turns on and he's like, hello again.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's Bob. And a guy who looks identical to Dave turns around and is just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. You know what's interesting about the scene that just occurred to me? These are two very different people. And she's ultimately getting into a relationship with someone who is like her.
Oh.
Yeah. But then Angel, who can't turn off, is like, you know that window was broken in from the inside.
And everybody's like, oh.
Yeah.
Because he just can't turn it off.
Yeah.
Always be observing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now two scenes later, we get to the sad travel montage that I mentioned 18 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It might as well have been like, hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
But with, like, you know, Jim Broadbent doing voiceover talking about how the cottage is ready. Oh, wait a minute. The cottage isn't ready.
Yes. We've got it. Oh, this is Mr. Butterman, your chief of police. Like, I'll welcome you to our precinct and however they actually say it. He's like, cottage ready for you right when you show up. And then it shows him getting on trains and buses and trains and taxis and just him holding this Japanese peace lily. And he's looking super sad because, like, Janine had pointed out, he's like, the longest relationship you've had is with, like, your 3-year-old Japanese peace lily that she calls the wrong name.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's the last part of Butterman's call is, like, the cabin isn't ready.
Yeah. And so he has to take up a room at the hotel. It's called the Swan Hotel.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
That's awful.
That's going to be brought up. Well, I mean, they reference a swan later several times.
So he walks in and there's Joyce sitting at the front desk and she goes, it appears the heavens have opened up.
Because it's raining and there's, like, you know, a thunder and lightning storm going.
Yes. And then he's like, well, I guess so, because he's assuming they're happening penalties. And he's like, I was hoping to rent a room. And she's like, but you've always been here. And my notes are like, the Shining vibes. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And she's actually thinking that it's her husband.
He's passed out on a chair.
Yeah, he's well passed out. And so she's like, I'm so sorry. I thought you were my husband. Fascist.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I can't remember the definition. She says the definition of fascist.
A government
that is marked by extreme dictatorship.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I've the cottage for me isn't set up yet, so I was hoping to take a room.
So he technically corrects her on the, she's doing a crossword puzzle.
Yes.
That's the important thing.
He goes, and that's fascism, not fascist.
And then she's like, oh, wonderful, because everybody in this town is weird.
Everyone is weird.
And then she hands him a key and says, a guy will help you to your room. And he's like, oh, well, I'm pretty sure I can manage on my own. And that's when he says,
oh, hag.
Yeah.
And she's like, excuse me?
Yes.
He's like an old woman.
Who's frightful or unpleasant.
Who is considered ugly.
Okay.
I have huge hag vibes right now. I mean, I oscillate between what you might call big energy and hag vibes. I'm a big hag.
You know what's great about this is she's like, oh, bless you, which, like, in the South is always like,
oh,
you know,
bless your heart.
Yeah.
Bless your heart.
Apparently that's like a UK country thing too.
Oh, is it?
According to this movie, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so he walks to his room, he sets down his plant, he's only got like a bag and a plant, he puts his jacket, like, these are cutting to looking at him performing these very specific, very short actions, and that happens throughout the film, so what makes describing the scene so hard?
Mm-hmm.
He hangs his jacket up, he sits on the bed, we get a picture of him on the bed, the rain has stopped outside, he doesn't have anything to do. So he picks up his jacket again, and you see him walk out into the street where it's no longer raining.
Right. He passes some hooded individuals
sitting on the Grey Hoodie Kids! I love you, gray hoodie kids.
They're sitting on a fountain, and they're just sort of like, they have their heads, their faces covered, and they're looking down.
They're not doing nothing. They're fine.
They're fine. They're just loitering. I mean, but it's like nobody else is around.
Loitering is more malicious than sitting on a fountain, by the way. Like, I think loitering is like when you like create your own pile of garbage and cigarette butts, and you're like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like really just like getting in the way of like progress of people in the area. But we're talking about an empty town square. The fountain isn't even like turned on, I don't think.
Right. It doesn't matter because Angel just passes that by and goes directly into the pub.
It's like the pub.
Because it's a small town.
Yeah. He walks in past a guy who's just like, another pint, Mary. All right, my love.
Yeah. And he's just like, can I have a cranberry juice?
Right away. Are you the new constable?
Yeah. Just got in. And it was just like, I don't remember all of the dialogue.
It's just he asks to borrow their newspaper. He's like, that's not our newspaper. Yeah. They reported Mary's age is 55.
And I'm actually 53.
And you, like, from even the first time she says it, you want to punch her square in the face.
Yeah, because it's like, lady, come on.
I mean, like, it's their whole thing is being hometowny.
Mm-hmm.
How much more hometowny can you get than a shitty little paper that your city puts out?
Right.
How do you feel about the Mirror from Federal Way?
I don't read the Mirror from Federal Way.
I do when I'm if I'm waiting for to-go food.
Okay.
And it's bad. Not as bad as the Coffee Times, though, which I also read, and it's bad. But I respect it as local media.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed how people that do really malicious things tend to nitpick small little things?
Are you talking about us, Jen?
No. 55 versus 53.
Yeah.
Like, these are people that have much larger concerns on their back or sins that they have been carrying around.
That's not the case. At the wrap-up, we'll talk about it, but you'd think it was the bigger picture, but it was never the bigger picture. It was always the smaller picture.
That they were concerned about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what Jen's saying, is they're more concerned with the little itty bitty things that ultimately so what is lost if she is quoted as being 55 instead of 53? What is the great tragedy? She's 2 years older in a paper.
Well, I mean,
did the world open up and swallow her whole because of it?
No. Plus also, and I've said this before and I will say it again, I love telling people I'm older than I am because then they think I look amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I look kind of shitty for how old I am. I look great for 45. You're 45? Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. This whole time.
So.
And I'm actually only 37.
So Angel takes his cranberry and this paper that they don't like. And he sits down and he's reading it.
The title is relevant to later on in the plot, but sucks if I ever read it.
I didn't write it down.
So the guy behind him is just like, another pint, Mary.
Yeah.
Oh, coming right up, my love.
Yeah. And that's when Angel is like hearing a bunch of ruckus laughter coming from an area of the pub. And he looks over and he's like, that person looks pretty young. That person looks pretty young.
Cuts to another table. Some kids are drinking beer out of steins with straws. And I don't know why that drives me crazy, but it drives me specifically crazy.
And you know these are kids because one of them has braces that when he laughs, like,
there's a car light, a headlight that comes in behind him and shines off of the dude's braces, causing Angel to wince really hard. And he turns his head away. And when he turns his head away, he looks straight at a sign that says, it is illegal to serve alcohol to persons under the age of 18. And you see his lawful good just snap.
And he's like into gear.
Mm-hmm.
He goes over to one of the kids and he just says, when's your birthday? And he holds up his badge.
May 29th.
Of what year?
Every year.
Out. Then he goes to another one of the kids and is like, when's your birthday?
March 25th, 1969.
You're 35?
Yes.
Out. Then he goes to the last kid with the braces.
I love this part. It's my favorite kid in this scene.
And he's like, when's your birthday? And the kid goes,
Can you crack your voice? I can't do it. Ouch.
Yeah. And then you see like these large group of teenagers all leaving the pub
at
the same time.
They're a little stumbly and they all walk out of the bar at the same time. It's probably 20 people.
It's a large group. And mm-hmm. then it cuts to a practically empty bar.
It's got him and the dude who was ordering the pints. And the bartender is, I only refer to these guys as the pub couple, right?
Yeah.
The dude is like, would you like another cranberry juice, constable?
And he's like, no, I'm good.
Just turns his paper. The bar is cleared.
Yeah. I do like the fact that he doesn't arrest anybody. He's just like, no, this is illegal. You need to, you know, not do this. Go away.
Yeah. And as rigid as he is as a character, this kind of speaks to him. Like, he's like, this is a reasonable way. They're committing this. They're disobeying the law. But like, if they fall into compliance, you know, he's not on the clock yet.
Right.
So some unknown time later, he leaves the bar. He walks over to the fountain, which has a placard on it, which has dusted with dew from the rain. And he notices the graffiti. The graffiti isn't terribly important throughout the film. I mean, we do have people with spray cans in a number of different places. But I thought that the symbol, like it looked like a kind of cursive looking nine.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be more important later.
Right.
But it never turns out to be like a code or something like that.
Right. I think it's just like a signifier of the fact that this one specific group is willing to kind of rebel. I mean, like, imagine
the hoodie kids.
Yeah. Like, they grew up in this town. They have to know that something weird is going on when there's all these accidents going on,
which we'll get into.
Yeah. Spoilers.
He leans down and looks at the placard and I'm not a slow reader, but I can't read through all of these people. I think the interesting thing to note is that all of the surnames, and I think it's Mr. and Mrs., Mr. and Mrs. throughout the entire list, but all of their surnames are activities, and all of them particularly pertain to their actions in this film.
Mm-hmm.
If there weren't like 12 or more of them, it'd be much easier to go through, but it's quite a long list.
Mm-hmm.
But he hears a noise.
Yeah, sounds like someone might be getting into their car, but sure, not really getting the key in there.
He turns around and he's like, oi. He probably doesn't say oi.
Yeah.
But I say oi, so I'm going to say, he's like, oi, you're not planning on driving, you right? And this guy turns around and he's like, no.
And he just kind of stumbles away. And then Angel goes back to examining the plaque and taking down information, making mental notes.
He hears an engine rev. He looks behind him. Shock face, which Simon Pegg does like a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He does a tuck and roll because of all of his special training and how mm-hmm. fancy he is. And the car, which is butt faced towards the fountain, runs straight into where he was standing.
Right. It goes into reverse, crashes into the fountain, doesn't take out Angel at all. And then you see him pull out the guy who is driving it, which at this point we should mention.
Don't say who it is.
No. Okay.
That's a big reveal later. And everybody already knows because this is a podcast.
Okay. So he pulls the guy out and he's just like, that's it. I'm taking you to the station. Where is that?
Yeah, because he's just gotten to town. He doesn't know where he works yet.
This guy actually takes him to the station?
Yeah, he like shows him the way, but they're on the way. They come across a kid who's one of the kids who exited the bar, and he's peeing on a fence. And he's like, oi, stop. He doesn't say oi, but he's like, hey, you, don't do that. Guy turns and looks at him, and he's peeing the entire time, pees right on their shoes.
Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to actually going to the station. And at this point, they've gathered up like three other kids, one of which is the braces kid with a traffic cone on his head.
Because why should shenanigans end anywhere?
Right.
So, dude looks a lot like Harry Potter.
Yeah, he does.
Especially with a traffic cone on his head.
It's really funny how people in this film look like two or three relations away from the person they look like. So this is like Harry Potter's cousin,
mm-hmm.
Sherman.
Sherman Potter. You're a wizard, Sherman.
Really?
Oh. Guy that's just left to sleep on top of the stairs instead of under the stairs.
He has to sleep out in the shed.
We're sorry to all Shermans out there.
I'm sure that guy's really nice, and he had a really great time being a stand-in for...
I wouldn't mind being a random zombie in a zombie film. That's like on my bucket list.
It truly is. I would love that too.
So Angel goes ahead and brings all these people into the station. The guy at the front desk who looks like, you know, is nice. He's got a nice, you know, his head's, you know, combed mm-hmm. and he is reading a book. And he actually makes eye contact with the inebriated guy. And he says, oh, are you here for the night? Cell 4 is open. And he goes and he walks.
I need to talk to that man.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to be any good in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then he's like, sure.
You're the new constable. When do you start?
Tomorrow.
Well, surely you're not going to process all these guys. My pen is running low on ink.
And that's when Angel pops out two pens. He's like, that's okay. I got my own.
I believe this is when you would reveal that he has big energy.
Oh, yeah. I think that's when you did it yesterday.
Oh, okay. Because here's the thing, guys. Let me tell you about this thing that is a 100% thing. And you know it's a thing, but you don't know to call it big energy yet. And I mainly say that for any women over the age of 40 who are listening to this podcast. When a person with a strong personality who is confident in their actions and secure in who they are places a reasonable demand and then expects that demand to be met. Like, it just, I mean, like, I don't have to prove the size of my dick to you. It's the opposite of a giant truck and a union flag on the back of it.
In this case, union, because they're from the UK.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They got like that pair of
Confederate flag for you guys.
Oh.
From here, right? That's what I meant to say.
Oh, okay. That's completely
flag.
Different.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, the opposite of a Confederate flag and a giant truck is big energy, which is just like, I've brought in these criminals and I'm going to process them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, all right.
All right.
All yeah. right. I bet if he told me that he was bigger than average, I'd believe him.
This is a guy that really has traded in his guns for pens and believes mm-hmm. that in the power of those pens and
yeah.
ink.
Well, I would contend to you that it's that he holds all parts of the job as sacred as the others. So whereas we, as a culture who takes in a lot of action films and cop stuff, at one point, and I'm sure I'll forget when we get to there, he's like, I assume that would accrue quite a bit of paperwork. Like when some sort of action-y cop thing was described to him
mm-hmm.
because he thinks of the whole picture, and that's like a criminal is responsible to be held accountable for their crimes, and I as a police officer correcting them for that crime am responsible to substantiate the claims I've made against them.
Right.
So when he double clicks his pen, well, he has two pens and I only have one, but he's just saying I take full responsibility. And like, I don't know about you, and I'm so sorry, but as I've gotten older, the more somebody's like, I'm going to take full responsibility for this, the more I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And so I'm just saying.
He's very, I mean, going back to like D&D references, he's very much a paladin.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I could see that. Mm-hmm. I could see that. Yeah.
So he processes all of these kids.
That's another montage. So yeah. he's like, I got all, like, he's basically like, I got all night. And mm-hmm. like, mugshot, paperwork.
You can't have that traffic cone on your head. Mugshot, paperwork.
Yeah, and then, I mean, they're all booked, and so then it cuts to him laying in his bed, like, using one of those hand grip strengtheners, and he's thinking about it, but he's, like, laying in his bed, bored, you know?
And then it cuts to him running in the morning.
Yes, with his sharp little tenny runners and his crisp little, like, almost prefect uniform,
mm-hmm.
and you can just tell that he's used to having things in a very specific and precise way. And then he starts running through this town,
mm-hmm.
and everybody starts saying hi.
They specifically say, good morning, Sergeant, even though the majority of the people he hasn't actually seen.
Yeah. He's only been in town for one night. He knows like four people.
Right. And then we get like one of the best exchanges with Timothy Dalton, who is a Bond, y'all.
He runs up, this guy with this beautiful mustache runs up next to him wearing a Fun Runner shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you two words I don't like next to each other more than Fun Run.
Did you go to Sahali?
I did.
They had a Fun Run there. And while I do appreciate the track as an adult, uh-huh. the idea of a run being fun just is like, no.
Okay. So you had to run a mile too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So what's your best time? Because I used my whole ass for one PE quarter. And I, my best time, I want to know if it's worth saying out loud.
I never ran. I always walked. And I was like, I'm going to make sure I take the full 30 minutes.
Beautiful. My best time hauling as hard as I could and like only stopping to for my asthmatic ass to wheeze for a little bit, 9 minutes and 30 seconds. That's my best mile.
Better than me. I think even at a fast paced walk, I can only do a mile at like 15 minutes. And I'm not going to run a mile. That seems like more work than I want to put out.
Yeah. So he looks like he's got a good clip on him. And then Timothy Dalton comes along and he's all like,
you have to arrest me. I am a slasher. Of prizes.
People who can talk and run at the same time should also be punched in the throat. But they both could do it, so.
Yeah. And this is Timothy Dalton's character is Simon Skinner. He mm-hmm. runs the local supermarket, and he's just being cryptic and weird, and that's his whole personality throughout the entire movie.
I will say something you brought up yesterday was that there's this very apparent and right off the bat red herring feel to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're like, oh, he's the bad guy. Oh, that means he cannot be the bad guy.
And then spoilers.
Spoilers. Okay, so yeah.
His name is Skinner too, and he's dropping all these murder hints to Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that with a few characters. His name is Skinner, and he's the most obvious quote unquote killer. And there's Messenger, who runs the newspaper.
Butterman. I don't know how that Butterman is not necessarily the name that was originally in the script, because one of the characters whose name is Butterman demanded to be able to name his own character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after Angel's interaction with Skinner, he goes back to the hotel and he, you know, goes to the station for work, and he comes in and the guy at the front desk is all disheveled. He looks
same guy as the night before, but with curly hair.
Yeah.
And he's like, how's the perp from last night? Who? The inebriate in cell 4.
Nobody tells me nothing.
He like stomps off to the cell. He opens the little spooky sliding window thing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see anybody in there. He's like, hey, open cell 4.
Daddy, open cell 4.
So the door opens. He sticks his head in. He doesn't see anything. Then he's like, my God, he's gone.
And then this guy appears from behind him, and it turns out it's the guy he was dealing with last night.
Oh my God, who's gone?
And it's Nick Frost.
Nick!
It's so cool. That was the big reveal that I was going to say earlier that now I'm going to say.
So he's like, what are you doing in a police uniform?
He's like, I am a police officer.
It's because I am one.
Oh, yeah. And then we see the chief come out.
He's like, oh, I see you've met my boy.
Yeah. And that's when Angel's just like, oh.
Yeah, I got some politics to deal with right now.
Yeah. He took a degree in politics at the academy. He knows what's up.
Yeah. So is that, do we go directly into it's time to do a tour?
No, that's when Angel goes into the chief's office,
uh-huh.
and it's like it's early in the morning,
uh-huh.
and the chief's talking about how Sanford's statistically the most safest village in all of the in the entire country, and Danny serves him like a piece of cake, and then Angel is he also brings up the fact that he arrested a bunch of kids last night, and he says, you know, there's a reason why we accommodate some of the youngins at the pub, and Angel says the greater good, and he's like, greater good,
because the couple said it when they were like, oh, we let some whippersnappers in here, but that's, we know where they are, we know what they're up to, it's for the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good. And then
I'm just not an ends justify the means kind of person,
right? But then Angel is just sort of like, so you think that that's enough to go ahead and blatantly disrespect the law? And Danny's like holding his piece of cake in front of his face. And he's just like, no, thank you. Just so aggravated.
I got weight problems, but it's hard for me to turn down a piece of cake that's right there.
Yeah. But eventually, you know, the chief's just like, don't worry about it. It's just the way it is here. You'll get used to it. So that sort of feel.
Like he'll handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He very much several times says, oh, I'll take care of it.
Yeah. And he takes care of it.
Yeah. Foreshadowing.
Yes. And so then they go ahead and go into the tour of the station.
Yeah.
The first place they go to is the locker room.
Yeah.
And then they go to the riot room.
There's a hedgehog in there, Lydia. He's just rolling around on dusty riot gear. He's so cute. I could die.
Because nobody needs a riot in Sanford.
No.
And then they go to the evidence room, which, what's the code to the evidence room?
The evidence code is 999, Lydia.
What's interesting about that?
I don't know, Jen. What's interesting about that?
It's the emergency phone number for the Great Britain.
Right. So if you go to your local police department and somehow have access to their evidence room and their code is 911, punch yourself in the throat.
Not like there's anything in the evidence room anyways. It's pretty much empty.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we also get introduced to the two detectives of the town.
Oh, yeah. They're the Andes. And they're just...
They're standoffish, jerkish guys who only get redeemed at the end of the film.
Right. And the chief says, do you know why we call them the Andes?
Because they're both named Andrew.
Oh, they said you were good.
Also, I love it when you say what Danny says next.
It's like, oh, also, Dad, talking to them is like an uphill struggle. And then...
the Andes throw a tin trash can at his head, and it totally sounds like when we hit the mic. I'm so sorry, Jen. It's true.
Yeah.
He gets introduced to that guy whose name, Mr. Mumbles.
Oh, yeah. So then they go and meet the rest of the police force. You have Sergeant Fisher, who's like this.
Is that the Bill Hader guy?
That's the Bill.
Three
Bill
generations
Hader's uncle.
From
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, he's no relation that we know of, but looks like Bill Hader if you melted him a little bit. Tell me I'm wrong, Lydia.
I'm not. That's why I'm laughing.
But when they cut to his face, like he's got a whiteboard behind him that has all these descriptors on a spider chart. And it says like unintelligent, slow, incompetent. And they're all things that describe him.
Right.
Yeah. But he's like, he tends to be the head of any crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
So he must be the most senior to whatever degree. He seems to always be in charge of procedure.
Right. And then you meet PC Walker, who's this old guy who mumbles a lot.
Dear God, let me remember his name, because all I care about is the fact that he's got the dog.
He's got a dog.
His name is Samson. Nope. The dog itself, I read the credits, is named Samson. The dog in the movie is called Saxon.
Yeah. And then they introduce Angel to one Doris. She's a woman.
That's all you need to know.
Actually, you need to know a few more things.
It's true, but here's the thing. In most police procedurals, like, or not even just procedurals, but like buddy cop films and like action films, you get introduced to the one female character, giant eye roll. She's going to be like a bag of stereotypes or so ineffectual or just like boobs.
She's
just boobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could replace her with a lamp and not change anything to the plot.
Well, you got
to
put boobs on that lamp, but yeah.
It's a sexy lamp.
Yeah. With boobs.
But here's the thing. The actress who's playing her is Olivia Colman. She is amazing.
Genius.
She has worked with three doctors. She was in the first episode of Doctor Who with Matt Smith. She did, from what I understand, 2 seasons of Broadchurch. There may be more and I just haven't seen. But Broadchurch is an actual police drama, which shows the range because she's hilarious in this movie. And she is amazing in Broadchurch. Do you know who else is in Broadchurch?
I do. It's my favorite Hamlet.
Yeah.
It's my favorite doctor.
Do you want to say?
I always want to say his name.
Yes, go for it.
It's David Tennant.
And Jodie Whittaker.
Oh, well, yes, Jodie Whittaker. But like, I want to talk about David Tennant because okay. I'd like to eat him with a spoon.
You would almost expect Peter Capaldi to be in this movie somewhere.
Yeah, no. Peter Capaldi, this is the thing that I didn't like about him being the doctor is that he didn't deliver the comedy the way that Tennant and Smith were able to deliver it.
Have you seen any other Peter Capaldi? He's a brilliant comedian. He just wasn't written.
He was the doctor from Who in the zombie movie that Brad Pitt did, debuted as Doctor Who.
Okay.
That's like the one Capaldi fact I have outside of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But he never really got to, he only did the one season, right?
I think it was two.
It was two, yeah.
Well, he never got funny enough for me. He got close, but then he got preachy. And now I'm just waiting for Jodie Whittaker to show me a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm behind, obviously.
Right.
But
anyway, so they finish off the...
Doris. Let's touch on Doris because you know she'd like it.
So Doris her whole character thing is that she is just kind of a little bit like raunchy.
Yeah, your first initial take is that she's trying to be part of the boys club and that she makes dirty jokes, but like, is it because she kind of has to? Mm-hmm. Has she been like, and then she's just like, oh, I wish I'd given you the tour. I've been around the
station a couple of times.
And he's like, oh.
And that's like her entire role in this movie is just to be kind of like, just to say sexual jokes.
Yes. That if the men had said it, it would have just been terrible. But because she says it, it's just, it drops like, it sounds like a big old like silver dollar hitting the bottom of a bucket. And you're just like, oh.
It reminds me of Seth Meyers. Yeah, he does those jokes that Seth can't tell with the two ladies.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's a really great bit. You guys waste some time on YouTube.
Yeah.
Jokes that Seth can't say.
Yeah.
It's either by a woman or a gay person or a gay woman person.
Or it's by both of them.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So, and that's what this reminds me of. They were like, we're going to bring in a lady and she's going to say some of the raunchiest jokes.
Yes.
And she's going to be able to get away with it because we can't.
And she does. I give her full carte blanche. Go for it.
Yeah. Olivia Colman. Mwah, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. But they end the tour at the NWA or Neighborhood Watch Association.
No.
Go for it.
The cuts in all of this drive us knuck and futz, right? What? The chief goes, well, it's 11:30 on your first day.
Yeah.
I'd call that lunch.
Yeah.
And now they go to the bar.
Doesn't Angel before that ask what? He's like, oh, do you have any questions for us? And he's like, oh, yeah. Why are you guys all eating cake?
The galette is courtesy of Danny because of his little indiscretion.
I'm pretty sure driving under the influence shouldn't be considered a little indiscretion.
No, this is because he misplaced his helmet last week. I assure you that this punishment for last night's indiscretion will be quite severe. Tell me, do you like ice cream?
And then you see Simon Pegg's face just go like we're a podcast. So I have to display this through audio means. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine someone making the face that expresses this sound.
Well, let me just tell you, we won't be short on Chunky Monkey anytime this month. Well, it's 11:30 and I've called that lunch.
We're a quarter of the way through our review of 2007's Hot Fuzz Applauder. And happy hour has only just begun. Thank you for joining us for May 2020's four-part review. Hey, this is your audio engineer and suspicious civilian number 5, Jen, reminding you to stay safe and alert as the new month begins. We'd sincerely like to thank our first responders, medical communities, and food service employees for their continued diligence in helping preserve our way of life. Not just the greater good, but what's good for all of us. Want to help keep us out of trouble? Donating $1 per month through Patreon using the support link on shockedandapplaud.com ensures that we have the resources needed to host our back catalog of episodes and keep us ad-free. Comment and like us on Facebook using @shockedandapplaud or Twitter using @shockedapplaud so we can reach more listeners like you. We'll also keep you updated with how we're growing month to month. We'll be back with part 2 in only 1 week. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.